The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM Channel 158. It's Gil Alexander. That's Kelly Billen over there, ladies and gentlemen. Right alongside. How you doing?
Doing great. How about you?
I was asking the people, but yeah, you're good?
Well, they can't answer you. I can answer you.
That's very true. You speak on behalf of
everybody
them.
Yell back into your car how you're doing.
I would hope people would. What do you think? I'm just talking at the air here? Talking in the wind? Wes Reynolds on the show today, co-host of the Long Shots. You heard of Long Shots, Kelly?
I've heard about
good
it.
Good golf
yeah.
podcast. You should really try to get on there sometimes. Jake Hahn talking hockey with us. Paul Sporer, Major League Baseball. Carl Sack going to join us this morning. Talk basketball as well. The National Basketball Association. We will do bitter MLB May most wins update. That's not a pretty update coming up. And maybe we'll even sneak in some French Open futures if we have some time as well. Let us start with just the weekend in general, which I don't know how you feel, but I feel like we crashed into summer this weekend. Like, I feel like we went from all this kind of activity is happening. This usually happens when you get to the conference semifinals in both the NBA and the NHL. But I feel like the nature of the games this weekend just drove it home even further, like into the sports netherworld depression. Mm. And yes, we will have the French Open in tennis and we'll have the U.S. Open in golf. But you get it. It's the sort of lull in the sports calendar storm that comes to us at this time of year. But it was the nature of the games this weekend, right? It was the game six between the Celtics and the Knicks. If gambling didn't exist, if sports betting didn't exist, virtually nothing was watchable this weekend, right? Knicks crushed the Celtics. Congratulations to those who had Knicks futures, right? Or Knicks series bets, I should say, in that series. Knicks beat the Tatum-less Celtics. They do so in a game where they led by 27 at the half, 35 after three, led by as many as 41. And the final score was a 38-point margin. The other NBA game yesterday, Game 7, I know it was a good outcome for you and your OKC futures. OKC, after trailing early to the Nuggets by 11, 21-10, that was the high water mark for the Nuggets, because after that, it was a 19-5 run for OKC. They took the lead. They ended up extending the lead to 14 by the half. They ended up leading by 25 after three. They'd lead by as many as 43 in a 32-point win in the end, because the Nuggets scored the last, 9 points of the game or something like that.
Just crazy how many of those games in that series, that end of the second quarter ended up mattering so much.
Yeah,
like that
flurries.
Just flurries.
Ray Leonard against Marvin Hagler. That's what it was. So those two games, virtually unwatchable. We have our conference semifinal set. We'll talk about that in moments. The hockey game last night, game seven between the Leafs and the Panthers. My God, Leafs fans. We'll talk to Jake about this later.
Sorry.
Oh,
it's rough.
They were up 2-0 in this series, and we forget they were up 3-1. The score was 3-1 in game three. Yeah. Toronto was up. And the Leafs, once again, failed to make the conference finals. They haven't been to a conference final since 2002. Haven't won the cup famously since 67, but they haven't been to a conference final since 2002. And Austin Matthews calling teammates passengers yesterday. Oh, that's brutal.
Passengers?
Brutal.
What does that mean? I didn't catch that.
That means too many. He said too many of his teammates were passengers.
Like, he's the captain leading the ship?
Well, basically that they were just standers by. That is a brutal.
That's about as brutal of a line as you can draw.
And they end up losing 6-1 yesterday. That game was kind of unwatchable after the Panthers took the 3-0 lead. You thought for a moment there in the third period when Domi scored 3-1, maybe this is something. That was quickly snuffed out. The PGA Championship yesterday also kind of ended up being unwatchable down the stretch. Though there was a moment yesterday in round four, I thought it was just going to be a walk in the park all day, a walk on the course, literally. Just a long walk for Scottie Scheffler, but it got dicey there in the middle when John Rahm caught him. They were tied, and then that stretch of holes, well, Rahm, I'll get the holes wrong, but Rahm, remember that long putt that he lipped out where you're like, oh my God, people were like, Rahm's winning this.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Jason who tweeted out, John Rahm is winning this tournament, right? As he tweeted that, it all went to hell for Rahm. So he lipped out that long putt. I want to say that was on 12. Don't hold me to that. Or maybe 13. But then remember, there was two straight holes after. It's almost like that unraveled him. because the next two holes he had horrific putts. Horrific putts. Yeah, and then it just got terrible from there, even worse from there.
Yeah, what was it? Three or four straight where he had birdie or par looks that needed to go. Looked like he had good looks. I mean, he pars the par 5-15th where he got a birdie there, and then it's bogey 16, double on 17, double on 18, tournament's over.
Yeah, he ended up seven back. Scheffler ends up winning the PGA Championship at Quail Hollow, the second major of the year. He ends up winning his third of his career. Remember, he won the two green jackets, and now he's won a PGA Championship. He ends up winning about five strokes over Harris English, Bryson DeChambeau, and Davis Riley. The three of them finish at a tie for second. So, and Scheffler, by the way, was some rare emotion after that.
Yeah.
Where he was just going nuts.
I think a little bit of that goes back to Thursday, Kiel. I think this was a wild tournament. Like, it did get boring, but like at the end, right? And I think a lot of us probably thought heading into Sunday, the entirety of Sunday could be boring with a three shot lead for Scottie Scheffler. Like, hats off to John Rahm for even making interesting, right?
Like, that was one of those moments in the middle of the day where I was like, oh, I probably should really start locking into this.
Yeah. Like, it got way tighter. I mean, you had DeChambeau in the mix on Saturday. At one point, he had a one-shot lead on Saturday. It looked like he was going to be there, but he fell off. But, Scheffler was one of the guys that was very outspoken about lift, clean, and place rules not being utilized on Thursday and how mud balls were affecting his game as much as they did on Thursday. We had a wild leaderboard after the first round, and we saw that kind of just slowly get corrected as the rounds went on. And, it ends up being the big dogs that were there at the end.
Yeah, and there it is. Justin Ray Golf always tweeting great things about golf. Justin Ray, 15 PGA Tour wins now for Scotty, including three majors before the age of 29. Since World War II, the only three names that have accomplished that, the only three people, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, Scottie Scheffler.
Every time I see 29 for his age still, he's like he's the oldest looking and acting 29-year-old on the face of the earth.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right.
More acting than looking. He doesn't even look that old, but like, what does he look? Mid-30s, but he acts like he's 48 years old.
I'm trying to think about this. 15 PGA Tour wins, including three majors before the age of 29. It's only Jack, Tiger, and Scotty. Am I surprised by that? I guess the 15 Tour wins is the thing.
That's actually the more impressive thing.
Yeah.
Because we've seen, I think, good examples, right, of Spieth, Rory, Scheffler, like we've seen guys that get on heaters over a few years, right, and pick up a couple major wins. This is like, I'm not trying to diminish a major win, but it is like 15 wins on the PGA Tour. It's hard to rack up in your 20s.
But you understand my point, though. So between the final round of the PGA, Game 7 in hockey last night, the two basketball games, the most awesome sporting event of the weekend was the Preakness.
Yeah, it was.
That was an unbelievable run by journalism down the stretch. That was incredible.
I was sitting in a race book watching it, and they didn't have the audio on. So I was sitting there, I'm like, who won? Like, for like 2 minutes after, I'm like, who won?
It was incredible.
And it was the track feed, so not the NBC feed. So like NBC, I'm sure the cameras were in on journalism right away. I'm like, I'm watching the track feed. I'm like, I have no idea who won this race.
Yeah. Even with the track announcer, he was so ho-hum about it at the end. Like, journalism, journalism wins. I was like, did he? I guess he did. Yeah.
Because you probably don't want to go all in if you're not sure, right?
Well, there was always was there a bumping issue? Was there some interference issue? That was an incredible run.
I thought he was toast with that. When he got, like, boxed in by those two horses, I was like, well, he's not going to get there.
This is, though, from a betting standpoint, if I may just vent for a second, this stretch of time. And by the way, doing great in these contests, both Spankies and baseball and the NBA Challenge. But here's the story of my life these days. I had Scotty for low round on the second round on Friday. He didn't win that. Didn't bet him on Saturday, low round, third round. He did win that. Baseball famously had the Mets race to 10, didn't win that. They won March, April. Didn't happen then. Had the Twins March, April. They didn't win that. They're leading May. What's another? Oh, the other one. What's the other one I'm talking about? Oh, and then there's journalism, right? Journalism. All these other horse races, I always bet just one horse to win it, right?
Yep.
This is the one where I decided not only am I going to do that, I'm also going to bet an exactness. So I just like gave the money back, on that.
Well, at least you bet it. I didn't even bet it to win.
But still, what's the difference?
I had four different trifectas and all that stuff going, and nope.
So I am either, how can I put this, ahead of my time, if you want to spin it beautifully in all these sports, or just an idiot.
I don't know what we call this, but everybody who bets regularly gets into that groove.
This is a pretty strong groove of them across multiple sports. It's like, I just can't get the timing
because it's the part you just brought up. That's always the difficult mental part, right? Where you're like, I can't, am I ahead of things? Am I behind things? What is going on here?
All right. And then explain one thing. We'll get to your thoughts on these lines here in these basketball games, but explain one other thing to me. Why is it that both in the NBA and the NHL, the team that played last that is still alive, so OKC in the NBA and the Florida Panthers, you know where I'm going with this, and the Florida Panthers in the NHL are both playing first.
I have no idea, Gil. And especially, it's not even just first. It's 2 days after they just completed a series.
Where the teams that have been resting get to rest even more.
Because
they don't have conference semifinals stuck in dates like they do with the finals. So I don't know.
Conference semis or conference finals dates?
No, I'm talking, they don't have conference finals dates set the same way as they do the league finals.
Correct. I'm assuming it has something to do with the networks. I'm assuming it's that, but I don't know.
Oh, that sounds kind of shafty, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I was thinking that already about the Thunder as I'm like doing some prep work yesterday on the NBA, but then that hockey game finishes. I'm like, hockey too? Are you serious?
I thought the same thing. I was like, what are we doing? All right, we'll get our thoughts on game ones in both of the NBA games. OKC installed as a 7.5-point favorite against the T-Wolves. Knicks installed as a 4-point favorite. We'll look at series lines as well. And again, hockey with Jake Hahn, Carl Sack on the NBA. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
The Sports Betting Network.
Take your betting to a whole nother level with First Bet. Whether it's Santa Anita, Gulfstream Park, or Saratoga Racecourse, First Bet puts the action at your fingertips. Sign up now at firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. And use promo code VSIN200 to score a 20% rebate on all your wagers for the first 60 days, up to $200. Don't miss out. Bet smarter today at firstbet.com. Skill Alexander, Kelly Billett alongside. Let's talk a little baseball beyond May wins. With our buddy Paul Spohr from Fangraphs.
Maybe in a minute
we can talk about that. Oh, in the meantime, then, can I give you a documentary recommendation since we have a minute?
Sure. I only answer that way because there's so many, like, you know, when someone's like, hey, have you seen this show? And it's like, I mean, I've heard of it, but it's like on my list of 900 shows to catch up on. There's too many good things on these streaming services.
What list do you consult more, your shows to watch or your bets I need to make
this
list?
This is a great question. I mean, I feel like most people have a running grocery list, too, right? Yeah. Like, that's always builds up during the week. Like, that one's not weird, right? I definitely have a show movie list, though. Like, I have that. I could show it to you right now.
A show/movie
Yeah,
list?
Like, hey, I'm going to write this down as some shows I want to watch.
Well, you know?
I even break it up. There's dramas. There's comedies.
Oh, my God. It's like 30 deep. All right. Well, someone recommended this. I apologize because I don't remember who recommended this the other day on Twitter. But I got on the old Netflix yesterday. You know Untold, that series of sports documentaries?
Yeah.
So their latest one is the Gilbert Arenas Javaris Crittenton.
Oh my gosh! Okay, please.
Incident.
Well, I mean, I don't want to say no spoiler alerts because we kind of know what happens, but yes. Be careful because this is the top of my list on documentaries. I've been looking forward to this one.
It is fantastic. I thought. Because why is it fantastic? It's not the most amazing story of all time. It's fantastic though because it's the first deep dive into that situation. For those who don't know what I'm talking about, when Gilbert Arenas and Javaris Crittenden both played for the Washington Wizards.
Which I'll push back a little bit. It was a ridiculous story.
It was, but I think there's probably a portion of the audience that is today that's like, what are you talking about? Because this is like, what? This is like 17 years ago. I mean, it's a long time ago. So when Arenas and Crittenden were both with the Wizards, there was an incident where both had guns in the locker room. And what ended up happening is they both ended up getting 50-game suspensions. And in the case of Crittenden, his life spiraled from there. And anyway, they have both Arenas and Crittenden on the show talking very sincerely and in-depth. And I thought they were both great. They were both now so many years later talking about it. And it was, how can I put this? It was just such a sad tale.
Just, oh, it's terrible.
So sad how the immaturity and even they would admit this, the stupidity and the egos of young guys lead to just what was just a personal tragedy for Crittenden.
It's sad.
And not only a personal tragedy for Crittenden, I should say the bigger thing is that he killed somebody.
Yeah.
He killed somebody.
Mean, it's
and
just,
oh, yeah. I won't spoil any more, but then there's even more tentacles to that because he's out free now.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching it. I'll leave it at that.
I mentioned this the other day. I was friends with his ex-girlfriend too, so I knew her perspective on the whole thing too.
Just the incident itself, like when it happened, like the stories that came out right after it was just one of the craziest locker room stories you'll ever hear.
Everyone was a loser in that story.
Yes.
Everyone. Let's talk some, but I recommend that highly. Untold on Netflix. Let's talk some baseball. Paul Sporer joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at Sporer. Sporer. He works at FanGraphs, and of course, the name of the podcast, Sleeper and the Bust. How you doing, Paul?
Gil, I'm well. How about yourself?
Doing very well. I want to ask you a couple things. One, the okay. San Francisco Giants, don't look now, as they say, but San Francisco Giants are one game out of first place in the National League West. This is incredible. This is after the Dodgers got swept by the Angels and the Padres got swept by the Mariners. And then the Giants do Giants magic things, and they win ball games. By the way, you see that game the other night? Wilmer Flores had a grand slam, a 3-run homer, yep. and a solo shot against yep. the Athletics the other night. The question is very simple. Would you bet the San Francisco Giants to win the National League West? And I'm getting the number here as we speak. I was too busy telling the
plus 1875. No, I'm just kidding.
No, that's not great. 12 to 1 on the Giants. Nice chance, though. He's just making up numbers. No. Kelly's just going to make up numbers.
The Dodgers price is just ridiculous in everything.
Well, the Dodgers are -450. The Padres are 8-1 and the Giants are 12-1. By the way, it should be mentioned the Diamondbacks, who are a few games back, are 11-1. What's the bet? If I said you must make one bet, what's the bet?
Probably the Diamondbacks or the Padres for me still. You know, I'm not going to hate on your Giants. I have a history on this channel of not being as pro Giants, even in the midst of their good seasons, because as is typical with the Giants, it doesn't look like it jumps off the page. You know,
that's
it doesn't
great.
Really jump off the page of like, oh my God, this is such an amazing team. But I've learned, you know, it only took, 4 or 5 years of them playing very well like this without a great team on paper. But no, I do think they have a lot of things working for them. They finally moved Jordan Hicks out of the rotation for Hayden Birdsong. I don't even know why they went back to the Jordan Hicks as a starter thing this year. Things are a little bit wobbly at times with Ryan Walker, but you got Camilo Duvall pitching a lot better this year. The offense is exciting. I love Jung-Hoo Lee and kind of the element that he brings to the team. It is such a deep, difficult division, though, that push come to shove, I still can't get there for a division bet. Now, they might hang around. They might win it. But if you're asking me where I got to put my money today, it's got to be on any of the other three. And I'm probably going to go Diamondbacks, Padres, more than the Dodgers right now, just because they lose a new pitcher every week. But I'm sorry. Am I hating your Giants too much? I can't do it.
That's why I asked the question. And I'm with you on the Padres, man. Like, as soon as I don't have a bet on them, I'm sure they'll put it all together. But as long as I have a bet on them, it's like, oh, the relief pitching sucks all of a sudden. Oh, the manager doesn't know how to manage the starters all of a sudden. or take out a relief pitcher. Oh, the offense can't get a hit to save themselves with runners in scoring position. They're in that rut right now. But I'm sure it will all come together because there's too much talent on that team. Let me ask you about this. So Mark Borchard, you know our buddy Mark Borchard, base winner. Mm-hmm. He and I do this derivatives pod, Q1, Q2, Q3. We go through all these betting stats. And last year, the biggest thing, the sort of the headline of what was uncovered was that the White Sox, while sucking royally, epically, right, and only winning 41 games last year, they were actually like a top five first five inning team betting wise. So it was this amazing thing where, you know, because a lot of that had to do with the fact that they were big dogs, but they would manage to stay ahead through five. Now, it's not as big of a, it's not quite in that direction this year, but it's almost the same thing. They were fifth first five when we did the podcast a week ago. They're ninth currently. but they're only like a few dollars away from being fifth as the ninth most profitable first five inning team in baseball. And once again, the White Sox having a terrible year. They're 14-33, not as bad as last year, but you get the idea. And my question to you is this something that bettors should believe is a sustainable thing again, that they might be profitable first five and then still result, but in games that will still result in them losing? Because there's two betting implications here. One is you could bet them in game knowing this. And two, there are certain sports books that offer something called a double result, a win first five and a loss full game, which is at really nice odds. So sustainable or not?
There is a tinge of sustainability here to this with the White Sox, because the hallmark of a bad team is always going to be a wretched bullpen. And, you know, the worse the team, generally the worse the bullpen. They've got a little bit of a vibe going with the starters. You know, Shane Smith's been a real big standout Rule 5 guy from Milwaukee. And then guys like Jonathan Cannon, Davis Martin, not so much Sean Burke, even though there was some expectation for him coming into the year. But they've gotten some decent starts. So I see how this works and the way it did last time, because, again, catastrophically bad bullpen is usually why you have a terrible, terrible team. So, but the only reason I have a little bit of skepticism is because despite, you know, at times looking decent as a starter, they don't miss bats. And so, you know, that's the part that scares me with it, with their starters, is they're not dominant. Shane Smith is the closest one to it. But if you're going to look for a positive, a little bit of a silver lining with the White Sox, I do think that their starting pitching is probably the best element of that team. And they could add some guys in season from the minors too. So there might be a little something there. I mean, I wouldn't go crazy on it, but I would certainly keep tabs on it with the White Sox.
The other thing, Kelly, we were talking about the golf thing, how they wouldn't let us in on Scheffler. Last year, you used to be able to get that double result on the White Sox at about 7-1 on average. Of course, the odds aren't as good this year.
Really? Oh, I can't believe this is happening.
It's incredible. DFS on the way out, please. What do we got today?
So today, I mean, we actually have a pretty interesting board because there's not a ton of studs. In fact, one of the best, Christopher Sanchez, is at Coors. My number one guy today is actually going against the Giants. Chris Bubich, I love everything he's doing this year. That's less against the Giants and more positive Chris Bubich. I like Nick Lodolo to trying to get right at Pittsburgh. Robbie Ray, the other part of that SF Giants game. And then as far as guys that you're picking on, Edward Cabrera with Cubs, Dean Kramer with Brewers, okay. Colton Gordon with Rays.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it very much. Paul Spore, everybody.
Thanks, Gil. Take care.
Coming back with that NBA playoff challenge update.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Start your day with an edge and a game plan. Listen to this, Kelly, the VSiN Daily Morning Bets Podcast. Your first look at the day's betting line, sharp action, and market movement in just 15 minutes. You'll get everything you need to know to make smarter wagers and stay ahead of the line moves, all before your morning coffee's gone. Hosted by VSiN's team of trusted betting experts, the Daily Morning Bets Podcast is fast, focused, and built for bettors like you. Listen to the VSiN Daily Morning Bets Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or get in on the VSiN Watch app. The sharpest way to start your betting day, the VSiN Daily Morning Bets Podcast. Check it out. Skill Alexander, we get tweets at Beating the Book. This is from, let's see, Brian M. Every time I walk into my parents' house, the TV is either on sports or on with reruns of CSI, NCIS, SVU, and L&O, etc. Yes, yep. It's all that stuff. Scuba Scott, my vote for this year's Hard Knocks would be the Green Bay Packers. The league throwing all that love to Green Bay this year by hosting the draft. Why not complete it by putting them on Hard Knocks? LFC also tweeted in again. So I wonder if the TV shows you watch could indicate future successes in life. Kelly would obsess over football on Thanksgiving while his siblings watch Law and Order. What do his siblings do for a living again? Dun dun. Insert Law and Order theme.
That's great. Yeah. That is great. Very true. Very true.
James Sott, are you guys, meaning you, Drew, and Zach, doing a French Open pod of the mega variety? Yes. We hope to do one this week. Hopefully Thursday. Wyatt Tomczyk out there listening. Hopefully Thursday. That's when the French Open draw will come out. They have a couple 250s and 500s on both the men's and ladies' side this week. Hamburg, Strasbourg, that kind of thing before the French Open next week. Begins on Sunday night, our time, French Open.
Hamburg, Germany?
Yes.
Strasbourg, Austria?
Oh, that's a good question. Switzerland? Strasbourg? Wow, I feel bad that I don't know. Okay.
It is. Wait, France?
Oh, it's on the border there, maybe? Is it a border town? Okay.
Well, you get the right with Strasbourg.
Questions that should be asked off air. Poor geography questions.
No, they're more fun on air. France.
France. Okay.
I would have gotten that so wrong. I would have gone.
But it's one of those things we should know. We should know.
I would have gone Austria or Switzerland first.
Before we get to West, you know the other big thing that happened this weekend? The Electric Daisy Carnival, EDC. Were you a part of it? Did you go?
No, not at all, Gil. It sounds like one of my worst nightmares to attend that. But the
me too.
It's just. Have you heard about like the traffic getting in and out of it?
They do it at the racetrack now.
Yeah, I think so, or somewhere up there.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, the smartest move I've heard is people paying to helicopter it. And I heard how much it was like last week, and I was like, you know, it's not even that bad.
Smartest thing they did was move it out there, because when it used to be here, closer to town, like it was.
I wasn't even around for that. But yeah, this morning downtown, we still got some EDC partygoers strolling the streets.
When EDC, I'm not trying to be funny here. When EDC first started, like if they got through it without a death by heat stroke or by something else, they were thrilled. Like it was bad the first few years.
That's awful. I don't know what would have changed to have stopped that, though.
Because they got smarter. They got like water was abundant. It was really like bad news the first few years. Wes Reynolds joins us. I'm not sure if he's ever attended an EDC. He doesn't seem like an EDC kind of guy, but you never know with Wes.
You never know.
It's very surprising. Courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, part of the whole glue that holds this whole operation together. You can follow him on Twitter at WesReynolds1. That's the number one. How you doing, Wes?
Gil, I think you already know the answer to that question. Hell no, I would not attend an EDC. I saw the tweets in terms of like what they charge in terms of for water and various beverages. It's like being out at the racetrack, like it, you know, seemingly very, very far away in a very remote area of town. That seems like really, really miserable to me.
Yeah.
But to each their own.
To each their own. That's exactly right.
Wes and I couldn't live. Like, Vegas is not that big a place. If you guys haven't been here before, I think most people think Vegas is bigger than it really is, the whole city. But Wes and I both live about as far away from that as you possibly could while still being considered in Las Vegas.
I was right about Strasbourg, right on the border, but not with Switzerland, with Germany. There you go. Anyway.
Wait, we should be better.
Wes, did you have Scottie Scheffler in this tournament, in the PGA?
I did not. And, you know, you could say buyer's remorse, but, you know, he was around 4-1 or a little bit less. So it's kind of like you take a shot and try to beat him and hope he's off. And he wasn't off. And it wasn't like he was really great in one particular thing. His all around game was the best. And I think, you know, There is a sign. I have a great picture of former Indiana basketball coach Bob Knight, where he's sitting in a locker room, just kicked back, drinking a Coke, and there's a prominent sign right next to him that says, "Victory favors the team making the fewest mistakes." And I think that applies to Scottie Scheffler here. Victory favors the player that makes the fewest mistakes. When he does make one, he is able to recover better than anybody else, just like kind of like Tiger was when he was on his run. And that's what happened. Like, if you look at the stat categories, he led tee to green, but it's not like he led in one particular category. He just wasn't bad in any of them and didn't have any deficiencies in his game. And even then, it got a little tight going into the back nine, where it's like, okay, you know, is he going to put this away? And then all of a sudden, a one-shot lead, and actually they were tied for a while, became like a six-shot lead, just like that. And he was by far the best player.
When we were doing primetime action, Kelly, Matt, and I made the outlandish statement at the time. I was like, you should probably think betting Scottie Scheffler every single golf tournament. We have reached the point now, again, we just flashed up a stat earlier, 15 titles before the age of 29, three majors, only Jack and Tiger fit that category along with Scheffler now. Have we reached the point in the sport now? Obviously, the U.S. Open is the next major. And I guess the question, I want to ask it this way. Have we reached the point that it's Scheffler, Rory, and then it's everybody else? Or is it a little less simple than that? And then the other part of that is, when it comes to the U.S. Open, you do have some U.S. Open specialists historically, right? Andy North, who famously does analysis for golf on ESPN, he won two U.S. Opens. Like, his game lent itself to really hard courses and performing well on that kind of course. On the harder courses where there was less of a chance for someone to go out and and shoot in a score that he couldn't possibly with the profile of his game. Do we have a player like that? Do we have a modern day equivalent to an Andy North? And what about the whole state of the game in general? Is it Scheffler and Rory so far ahead of the pack at this point?
I'll go with the latter question first. You've got a very, I think, very tight circle of players in terms of guys that have been winning major championships lately. Not only Scheffler, but McIlroy, Xander Schauffele, as he kind of works his way back in the form. Keep in mind, he did win two of the four last year, so you can't necessarily rule him out. Bryson DeChambeau. I think what's going on here is the mid-range guys just aren't getting it done. The guys that are below that top class on the odds board that you see pretty much every single week, the guys in the 30-1 range, 35s, like, those guys don't feel like they're threats right now to win majors. The Victor Hovlands of the world, the Patrick Cantlays,
Zalatoris,
Tommy Fleetwoods, the Colin Morikawas, even though he's not that far down the mid-range, they just don't feel like threats right now. It feels like a very concentrated, small circle of players that are going to win these things. And you just, I think the last dark horse was Brian Harman at the Open. Like, there's always kind of going to be an outlier every couple to few years where it's like a guy that comes out of nowhere is going to go ahead and win. But yeah, you just, right now, it's very, very top heavy. When I look at it, going forward with the majors.
Wes, question about this week. I know you and I will be talking tomorrow on Long Shots about the Charles Schwab Challenge. I just pulled up the odds board, though, and I guess I'm a little surprised to see that Scottie Scheffler hasn't already withdrawn. Should we be making bets? Should we be making bets today, or do you think Scotty will stay in this thing?
I think he's probably going to stay in, Kelly, just because he is a Dallas guy now, and this is being played in Fort Worth. This is the Charles Schwab Challenge. Of course, Ben Hogan, this was essentially his event. They called the course Hogan's Alley down there at Colonial. So I don't think he's going to withdraw. I think, unless there's a really, really good reason, and I guess winning the PGA is a pretty good reason, but I don't think he's going to withdraw this week. I would be shocked if he did. I don't think he likes to do that in these Texas events. He really wants to win these events in the state of Texas. So yeah, looking at the odds right now, +2.25 for him to win, and then the next price is 20-1. So that's what you're getting when you get a guy that's on a roll like Scottie Scheffler. Those are the odds you're going to get. So we shall see. I don't want to, like, but now I'm worried to start writing this thing, and it's like, oh, God, I got to change the whole darn thing.
No, it's a good thought when you have such a difference between the short shot and the next shortest. It's a good thought to have. What about the question I asked about U.S. Open specific? Oakmont, June 12th. Is there a golfer today that fits that niche kind of thing that Andy North did back in the day?
Well, I usually with U.S. Opens, I do kind of like grinders a little bit. I was very surprised to see Matt Fitzpatrick play very well at the PGA. He was in it pretty much all weekend, was in the final couple pairings, and we did have him a couple years ago when he won at Brookline up in Massachusetts at the Country Club, and kind of a grinder. He's a guy, because the U.S. Open is a major that you're not shooting double digits under par. This is grind out for par and try to shoot one under on your round, and lower scoring events like that, I think, favor certain players that are a little bit grinder. So Matt Fitzpatrick, as I'm kind of looking down the list here, gives me a little bit of an interest because he's a grinder. He's not going to win at like 20 under par or something like that.
Wes, hold the thought. We'll come right back. We'll continue this with Wes Reynolds next.